Welcome to The Challenge, where we'll discuss the challenges that life gives us. Challenges from the perspective of people with disabilities, and challenges from those who encounter a disabled person in any walk of life. If you have comments about the show or would like to be a guest, call a listener feedback line at 206-333-0257. That's 206-333-0257. Or send email to challenge8255@gmail.com. And now your host, Steve Bauer.
Welcome to program number 7. My guest this week is Tiffany Nickel. And Tiffany, I'd like to welcome you to our show. And first of all, how about giving us a quick description of your disability?
Sure. Thanks for having me. I have a spinal cord injury at the cervical 5th through 7th vertebrae that I suffered through a diving accident in 1996 and left me paralyzed from about the upper chest level down. I do have movement in all of my limbs, but nothing functional enough to allow me to walk. No fine motor movement in my hands or my fingers. Limited tricep, bicep movement. Stomach movement is limited, and so on and so forth.
So normal until 1996, huh?
Yes. I was 23 years old, and I dove into a swimming pool, the shallow end, thinking that I was going to go across to the deep end. And I went straight down, according to the witnesses.
Wow, I bet that hurt.
Yeah, I don't remember hitting the bottom of the pool at all. I immediately knew that I was drowning and could not move and was in lots of pain, but didn't know why, didn't realize what had caused the pain. And then there were gentlemen in the pool who basically rescued me and stabilized me until the ambulance came. So that started 3 months of surgeries and rehabilitation and a whole new life.
I take it you use an electric wheelchair?
Yes, I do. I started with a manual wheelchair, and I still could use a manual wheelchair, but one of those things that I had surgery the year after my accident. I guess it was the summer of 97, I believe. And so I was put into an electric wheelchair because I had hand surgery and couldn't propel the manual chair. And my life was just amazingly more independent than what I thought I could gain. And so since then, I could do ramps and rough terrain, and I could go through the grass, and I could get from point A to point B in a fourth of the time it would take me to push myself in a manual chair. So I decided that to become more independent and have more freedom, an electric wheelchair was the better use for me, or better fit for me than a manual chair.
How about driving?
I do drive. I have a modified minivan where I transfer into the driver's seat, and that seat then swivels around underneath the steering wheel, and it has a ramp, and so I get to my destination, and I transfer back to the wheelchair, and then I go out through the ramp, and vice versa to get in and go somewhere. It's been an amazing, wonderful modification. That in itself totally changed my life. It was probably... I had my accident in September of 96, and I would say it was November that next year before I started driving and had my van, and that completely changed my world. Relying on someone else for transportation, as you know yourself, is very tasking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just sometimes you just want to hop in the car and go get a beer or something, and you can't because, well, they just haven't figured out yet how to let blind people drive.
Yep, that could, yes. I'm sure somewhere in the future they have some plans for it. But when I remember when I first was injured, before I had a vehicle, I did the paratransit. And I was taking it, I was living at my dad's house, and I was taking the paratransit from my dad's house, which was maybe 20 minutes from the rehab facility. I was doing swim lessons and some outpatient physical therapy. And they didn't arrive at his house until 5 minutes before my appointment was scheduled. And by then, I was so frustrated and just depressed over the whole thing. And so it was just a real eye-opener that patience is definitely a virtue when it comes to relying on other people.
Oh, absolutely. So how long was it after you had the injury that you finally, shall we say, kicked yourself in the butt and said, hey, I got to do something to get my life going again. I can't just sit here and feel sorry for myself.
That's a good question. A lot of people ask me that, and I think there's different levels to that question. I definitely decided that when I left rehab as an inpatient, you know, I then started outpatient rehab and physical therapy and occupational therapy, and I was reliant upon someone pretty much for everything, to get a dish down out of the cabinet, to help me get into the bathroom, to help me toilet myself. I mean, everything other than feeding myself I was reliant on someone for. And I was not happy at all. I was very depressed. I was very angry. And I knew that there had to be something else out there. I knew that I hadn't reached my point of acceptance yet. So a lot of people had mentioned to me going to Craig Hospital, which is a spinal cord institute in Englewood, Colorado. And I made the decision to go. Insurance approved it remarkably. And I went there by myself for 5 weeks of what they call transitional living training. And I lived in a semi-apartment. And that's when the eye-opener finally came that you can do this and you can do this well and you'll be able to be successful. There were people there my age. There were women there who had been injured with families and single women and women who had careers and women who were in college. And there were young boys and young men, and it just was an environment that I felt accepted in, as opposed to a rehab here in town where there was one other person who had a spinal cord injury close to my age, and it was a gentleman in his 40s, and then everyone else was stroke victims or amputations because of diabetes or hip fractures. They were senior citizens, and so I just was not in a happy place when I went home. So to answer your question, that's kind of a long answer, but I would say maybe 5 months after I finished my training at Craig and came home in April, I decided that life was going to be okay. It wasn't going to be easy, but it was going to be okay.
Are you able to live by yourself today?
Yes. In fact, that April I moved back home at my dad's house, and that was a lot of it, too. We'd lived there since 89. He had built this home that we were in, and it was kind of his dream house. Well, I don't think anyone builds their dream house to be accessible. No one foresees himself having a disability of any kind, I don't believe. And so there were steps up to the front porch, and there were round doorknobs that I couldn't even turn, and I couldn't get into the bathrooms, and we had to take doors off. And so there again, it was really difficult living in an environment where you're pretty much trapped in and out of the home without help. So that next August, my voc rehab counselor was able to find accessible housing in El Dorado, which is where I was teaching, and then I moved into an apartment and lived there with attendant care, of course, every morning and every evening, and then I've lived independently ever since then, so I guess I'm on 11 years. I bought a house and renovated it, and just have loved it ever since.
Before your accident, you were 23, I would assume you went to college. What career path had you laid out for yourself at that point?
My career path was to be an elementary special education or middle school special education teacher. I had just graduated December of 95. I had taught 8 days, 8 half-days actually. That's when we had heat plans still, because not all the schools were air-conditioned. So I had taught 8 days, and then I had my diving accident without the rest of that year. So my career goal was to be a special education teacher in the field of mental retardation and to specialize with children with Down syndrome or autism.
Now, today you are also a teacher. What field are you teaching in?
I went back to special education. I taught 6th grade regular education science for 4 years. And then I went back to where my heart is in special ed, and I'm an elementary 3rd through 5th grade interrelated special ed teacher, meaning that they put a variety of students with special needs and different disabilities into the same classrooms, and then I differentiate or individualize their education programs.
As a teacher, have you received some opposition or hesitation from parents thinking, how can this person that's disabled not only teach, but teach my child?
That's a great question. the only parent who has ever said anything to my face, now you know how people like to talk,
yeah,
was they had a son who had significant emotional disturbances, and she was the only person who ever said, her exact words were, "I didn't think you'd be able to handle him because you were in a wheelchair." Those were her words. And I've been teaching for 11 years, so if you average that, I've had 20, 25 kids a year in elementary school. Now in middle school, of course, I had hundreds, but I think that's a pretty low ratio, so I feel good about that. I feel confident about that.
Do you have any special accommodations at school, either from people to assist you or in your actual classroom facility?
Fortunately, in the world of special education, there are paraeducators to help with children, and so if I need tasks done, they're real good about assisting me there. But other than that, actually, I let my students do it. If I need something I can't reach, I'll ask my student if I need, because of my limited fine motor, if I need things passed out or stapled or sorted or picked up off the floor. My kids are always there, and most of the time they're doing it or asking me if I need it done before I have to ask them. So that's been amazing. I think there probably is, and this is my own opinion, but there probably is no other career or profession where you're accepted as quickly as you are by children. In the business world, you know, you have your suit and your tie, and women come dressed in their high heels and their skirts every day. And I just feel like in the education world, everybody tries harder to accept other people, in my opinion. So I think it's a good fit.
And what about your colleagues there, your fellow teachers? How are they in when it comes to acceptance?
You know, I have been truly blessed in all the buildings I've been in. I've been in three different schools. And, again, I've never had anyone discriminate against me because of my disability. They've never thought less of me or didn't provide me a challenge because of my disability. I'll have people tell me often that they eventually don't see the wheelchair. They don't see my disability. They don't see my limited fine motor. They just see me. And still to me, when I look at myself in the mirror, I see my disability. I see the wheelchair. You know, I see my hands. And they don't. And I just, like, I've just been truly blessed. Just kind of, I'm at a loss of words, but people are good to me. They, you know, they have amazing hearts, and I'm very fortunate to be in the places that I've been.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You're listening to The Challenge. To receive email updates about the show and our guests, you're invited to join our mailing list. Simply send a blank message to challenge 8255-subscribe at googlegroups.com. That's challenge 8255-subscribe at googlegroups.com. Once again, your host, Steve Bauer.
If there was one thing that you would love to be able to do today that you can't, what would that be?
Wow. Probably dance with my students, get out and run around with them at recess time, shake people's hands without them stopping to think or hesitate about how do I shake her hand, how do I grab her hand. But it would have to be interact with students or interact with people in a physical fashion. I was always very touchy-feely. You know, that contact, that physical contact is a huge part in making people feel comfortable. And hugging people and just, you know, waving hello or goodbye, and those are things that I miss.
What about the computer? How are you able to handle the typing on a keyboard?
Sometimes I do my thumbs. I did have hand surgery, as I mentioned, on my right hand to make it a little bit more accessible. It opens and closes better than my left hand, so I can kind of chicken peck around with it. And then I also use pencil erasers. And one of my parents said the first year that she worked with me, she's like, "Wow, you're awfully fast with those." So I've learned to adapt using just pencils with erasers, or what they call in the rehab world, type sticks. You can buy these pieces of wood with a foam tip on them. I decided, too, when you're in rehab and your occupational therapists have gone to college for years and they've learned about all these great pieces of equipment and ways to modify things and silverware, and it was really important to me to not have to use adaptive aids so that I didn't look even more disabled. So So I've really learned how to accommodate with just everyday tools, everyday silverware, everyday writing utensils. There are certain pens that I can use better than other pens that I've learned, certain thicknesses of toothbrushes or makeup brushes. I put my contacts in all by myself with a little device. And it takes practice, and the first thing you do isn't going to work, and maybe the second thing doesn't work, but eventually you're going to find your niche and hopefully make life a little bit easier.
Now, you are involved in wheelchair athletics, which always sounds to me like an absolute scary thing to be involved with. Tell me about your activities there.
Wheelchair Sports is an organization that was actually introduced to me through the gentleman who sold me my first wheelchair. Ironically, he was an able-bodied person, and he was involved with Wheelchair Sports. And he said, hey, why don't you come at this, you know, meet other people. Well, I was still really closed-minded and thinking, you know, I don't need that. What is there for me? I was never really into sports. Swimming was really the only competitive sport I did all of my life. I think I started competitively swimming at the age of 6 and did it all the way through high school. So I wasn't into wheelchair basketball, and I wasn't into hockey, and I wasn't into tennis. And after my accident, I don't sweat anymore, so I really have to be careful of where I'm at or how I exert myself through heat stroke and heat exhaustion. But I thought, you know, let's give it a chance. And the first couple times I kind of felt out of place, but I met a woman who was right around my age, and she kind of became an advocate and mentor for me. And then my dad had started attending and volunteering in a lot of the events. And the man I was dating was real supportive and said, you know, let's continue to go to these. So wheelchair sports has kind of become my second love besides education and of children, that is. And it's interesting because through wheelchair sports, I'm still educating others on how to maintain healthy lifestyles and how to be socially active and how to be, just how to find recreation that's accessible to wheelchair users. So it's just kind of become a love. I'm doing water skiing, snow skiing. I do the indoor bowling. And everybody says, well, why aren't you playing tennis or why aren't you doing this? I kind of feel more like I'm the cheerleader, the back behind the scenes organizer, the recruiter, the volunteer. Some people would say that I'm the person in charge telling everyone else what to do. But I just really enjoy it.
When people participate in different wheelchair athletic activities, is it a combination of powered chairs and manual?
That's a good question. There are not a lot of electric wheelchair users that participate athletically. The only other electric wheelchair user that I am aware of in the last, I think I've been in wheelchair sports maybe 9 years, is Nick Taylor. He is currently competing for tennis in the Paralympics for the Beijing Olympics, and he was born with a birth defect. That's the only electric wheelchair user that I have seen participate in our event. Most often they are paraplegics or they are low-level quadriplegics, meaning that their level of injury is close to a paraplegic level. They may still have some of their hands or arms affected, but still be able to propel themselves very well in a manual wheelchair.
When you're in a group of people and you're talking with people, do you prefer that someone takes a chair and sits down to talk with you, or how do you deal with that? Is that a problem for you, dealing with people that are always standing there and you're having to strain your neck and look up?
That's a really good insight. It's interesting because you immediately know who has some sensitivity to people in wheelchairs because they will immediately crouch down or grab a knee or grab a chair. And then there are other people who just think, hey, she's one of the group. You know, I'm going to stand here and I'm going to talk. So it's interesting. I don't know that I have a preference. I know that for me physically, it's easier to talk to someone at my eye level due to my restricted lung capacity. It's a little bit harder to look up and then to project my voice. Especially if you're in a restaurant or in a waiting line or if you're at the woman's fair or if you're at a concert, my voice doesn't project as well anymore. So it is more difficult if they're not able to be at my level. Now, technology being the way it is, I was the last wheelchair that I purchased 2 years ago has a seat elevator lift on it, so I'm now able to rise up to their level.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's an amazing function. I've really enjoyed it. especially around the house like tonight, I was putting clothes up or I was putting dishes away in the cabinet. It allows me to be more functional and more independent. And you can even sit at the bar level now, which is, you know, before my friends would always be very cognizant to, hey, we can't do this. You know, Tiffany's going to come along. Let's get a lower table. But now we just get in there and hop right up to the bar and call it good.
Oh, how slick. Is there any area or any kind of topic that I have not asked you about that you would like to address?
I think that, of course, in my group of wheelchair users, one of our largest complaints is abuse or misuse of wheelchair, handicapped accessible, van accessible, whatever you want to call it, parking. And that is and that will always be an issue because of the fact that I'm able to be independent, so I go shopping by myself. But if I can't get out of my van because someone's parked in an access aisle, or if I can't get back into my van because someone has blocked me in, you know, those right there stop my independence. Whereas your able-bodied person can hop in and out of their car on either side, or maybe 5 inches of clearance or 5 feet of clearance, it doesn't matter to them. And it's pretty significant. It can affect your entire day. So I just really wish that people overall, in general, would be just a little bit more sensitive to that need and aware of the need and not take advantage of their grandparents' parking placard that they might have had now for the last 5 years, even though grandma or grandpa's in a nursing home. You know, that's just an example, but I think that's a very large concern still of wheelchair users. Or people with walkers or canes or people with mobility, knee issues.
Because often a disability may not be visible, and some people often assume that they're not disabled just because they don't appear to be.
Right.
And that in itself can be a problem.
True. And I have some very dear friends who have heart conditions, and they're senior citizens, and their doctors have told them, due to your heart condition, you are not allowed to walk for more than 100 feet or 500 feet. So you do. You have to be compassionate to it, but it's very obvious, too, when people are blatantly misusing or abusing the parking spot.
Well, Tiffany, you have a very positive attitude, and I think that's always an important thing for those of us that have a disability of any kind to make it in this world. If we're positive about it, most often the people that are around us can also be positive.
Yeah, I would strongly agree. And, you know, again, none of my friends that I ran around with prior to my accident and none of my family have left my side. And I feel very rewarded in the fact that they now educate others. And a lot of times they'll say, oh, you'll never believe what I saw today. And they'll mention something about a new place that's accessible. Or it's real interesting how even just taking 30 seconds and they'd say, hey, we can't go shopping there because the aisles are just packed. It'll be hard for you to get around. Let's try somewhere else. I've been very fortunate to be surrounded with people who are willing to be educated and to open their eyes to this world because none of us foresee it. And it's hard. I mean, even getting in people's homes, there's a whole plan that you have to come about. And my friends and family have been just amazing about, okay, what do we need to do? Can you get in this door? I'll have my husband come home. I've been blessed, and I know that I've said that more than once, but without family and friends and your coworkers and your, in my case, my students, without them embracing me and all of me, then I think I would be just the opposite. I think I'd be very negative and very depressed and very cynical about the world, but it's because of the people who are around me. They allow my life to be positive, and they allow me to live a life that I always dreamed. No, I didn't dream of being in a wheelchair, but I've been assisting people with disabilities since I was probably 6 years old. And I knew when I was 12 that I wanted to help persons with special needs. So it's kind of weird now that I am that person with a special need.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and wish you continued success in your career and your athletic adventures as well.
Thank you, and you too. Good luck with the show. I hope it's a huge success.
Well,
Well, it was really inspiring for me to talk with Tiffany and to learn how she deals with the challenges that she faces on a daily basis in life. And this week, we have some listener feedback from the comment line.
Hey, Steve, it's Sam and Dave. I just want to let you know we have been listening to, actually, we have heard all three of your challenge broadcasts. We just haven't been in a position where we could call you right up and call you on air. But, well, not on air, but you know what I mean. Anyway, Steve Barrell, quite interesting. Dave has known Steve for many years, and I have met him a few times. I found it very interesting what he was saying about Braille. One of my very closest friends, now deceased, was a sighted Braille instructor. Well, she was a daily living techniques instructor by whatever name they call it in Pennsylvania. And she was able to persuade, if you will, and help a number of her clients, including a gentleman whose life was terminal due to AIDS, to, if he would just learn enough Braille, he could go back to playing his music, his records, and cooking. And shortly before he died, he gave a gourmet dinner. And his partner said, you know, he was so glad because the guy had given up. And Gail just looked around the room and said, oh, hey, I see your records here. I bet you could learn. He didn't need anything. He didn't want anything from the agency. And he was doing nothing, just waiting to die. And first it was, I bet you could learn enough Braille to label your records. Then it was, well, you could, you know, go back to cooking again if you labeled your spices. You could learn, we could work on that. And before you know it, the man learned grade two and certainly couldn't prolong his life, but he died happy, much happier than he would have been otherwise. And his partner was eternally grateful to her. So Braille is important, can be for anybody. The degree to which we use it, as he said, is up to the person. But I know even with refreshable Braille and labeling, we don't use the Perkins nearly as much as we do, either one of us, but we certainly do use Braille. But it was a very set of great set of interviews. And talk at you later.
Pam, thank you so much for calling in. We do appreciate hearing from you. And if you have comments or feedback for us, and of course, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, we'd love to hear from you as well. And one of the things that makes doing this show so interesting is I get a chance to meet some very interesting people. And it's really nice to be able to share their story with you. Next week, my guest on the program will be Rob Tabor, who is a blind attorney. Rob is in Lawrence, Kansas. We'll talk to him about the challenges that he faces in being a blind attorney. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. We'll see you next week for another edition of The Challenge.
If you have comments about the show or would like to be a guest, call a listener feedback line at 206-333-0257. That's 206-333-0257. Or send email to challenge8255@gmail.com. To receive email alerts about the show each week, including information about our guests, send a blank message to challenge8255-subscribe@googlegroups.com. That's a blank message to challenge8255-subscribe@googlegroups.com. Thanks for listening, and stay strong when encountering the challenges of life. Please join us next week at this same time for another edition of The Challenge from ACB Radio Mainstream.